Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Intellectual Property Group, was recorded on Tuesday, June 14, 2016, during a live Courthouse Steps teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group's Courthouse Steps teleforum conference call on the Supreme Court's decision yesterday morning in Halo Electronics v. Pulse Electronics. My name is Will Courtney, and I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all opinions are those of the expert on today's call. Additionally, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we're pleased to welcome Professor Kristen Osenga. A more complete bio was provided to you in the notice of the call, so I'll stop here to preserve more time for her presentation, which will be about 10 minutes, followed by your questions. With that, Professor Osenga, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Will. As Will mentioned, I'm Kristen Osenga, Professor of Law at the University of Richmond School of Law. I'll be talking to you today about the Supreme Court's decision in Halo Electronics versus Pulse Electronics and the consolidated case with it, Stryker Corp versus Zimmer. These cases were argued in February 2016 and decided June 13, 2016, yesterday, if you're listening to this live. This is a case about enhanced damages in patent infringement cases. Specifically, 35 U.S.C. Section 284 states a district court may increase the damages up to three times the amount found or assessed. At issue is the question of when a district court should be able to award these enhanced or treble damages. About 9 years ago, the Federal Circuit answered the question in the case of In Re Seagate Technology. Yesterday in Halo Electronics, Chief Justice Roberts delivered the unanimous opinion of the Supreme Court that rejected the Federal Circuit Seagate test as too rigid. That's the takeaway from yesterday's opinion. Now let me give you some more details. In the 2007 In Re Seagate Technology case, the Federal Circuit set forth a two-pronged test for when a district court may award enhanced damages under 284. First, the patent owner must show by clear and convincing evidence that the infringer acted despite an objectively high likelihood that its actions constituted infringement of a valid patent, or what's known as the objectively reckless prong. Second, the patent owner must show that the risk of infringement was either known or so obvious that it should have been known to the accused infringer, again, by clear and convincing evidence. This is known as the subjective knowledge prong. If both of these prongs are met, then, according to Seagate, a district court has the discretion to award the enhanced damages under 284. What happened at the district courts in the Federal Circuit in the Halo and Stryker cases at issue here is not terribly instructive except to illustrate the impact of the Seagate test on patent infringement litigation. In the Halo case, patent owner Halo sued Pulse. A jury found infringement and that it was willful, but the district court did not award enhanced damages, finding instead that Pulse Electronics had presented a defense that was not objectively baseless, and therefore Halo couldn't prove the first prong, objective recklessness. The Federal Circuit affirmed this finding. In the Stryker case, patent owner Stryker sued Zimmer. A jury found that Zimmer willfully infringed Stryker's patents, and the district court in that case did award enhanced damages. The district court pointed to Zimmer's behavior, quote, all but instructing its team to copy Stryker's products. Treble damages, the district court then stated, were appropriate, given the one-sided nature of the case and the flagrancy of Zimmer's infringement. However, at the Federal Circuit, the judgment of infringement was affirmed and the enhanced damages were vacated because, as the Federal Circuit said, Zimmer had asserted reasonable defenses to infringement at trial. Both of these cases were appealed to the Supreme Court to determine whether the Federal Circuit's Seagate test is consistent with 35 U.S.C. Section 284. The opinion, delivered, as I mentioned, by Chief Justice Roberts, is very straightforward exposition of the issue. The court begins with a discussion of the history and purpose of enhanced damages, which is to punish the, quote, wanton and malicious pirate and the deliberate infringer. After briefly discussing the two cases at issue, the court gets to the meat of the matter. The court first points to the language of the statute. A court may increase damages. There are no terms of limitation, no additional conditions. But the term may is a word of discretion. Discretion is, of course, not free rein to do whatever the district court likes. There must be some basis for the district court's determination. but it is perfectly within the district court's purview to determine if the case before it is egregious, deserving of punishment. As the court goes on, if it involves willful, wanton, malicious, bad faith, deliberate, flagrant, or pirate-like behavior. The court then looked at the Seagate test. At the outset, the court recognized that the Federal Circuit Seagate test does have some value. It reflects that enhanced damages should only be awarded in egregious cases. However, the Supreme Court concluded the test is too rigid and takes away the district court's statutory discretion and, possibly the worst of all, insulates the worst infringers from liability. According to the Supreme Court, the worst problem with the Seagate test is that it required a district court to find objective recklessness by clear and convincing evidence. To require this finding means that the very worst infringers, those that have subjectively no aim other than to steal willfully and deliberately that which belongs to another, can escape liability if there's some plausible way that they can get out from underneath it, failing to meet the objective recklessness requirement. As the court explains, it is unclear why, in the context of absolutely deliberate wrongdoing, then an independent showing of objective recklessness is required. Clear subjective faith should be able to, at a court's discretion, be sufficient to establish a case as egregious. Being able to claim some reasonable, albeit unsuccessful, defense at trial after the fact should not erase deliberately wrong behavior that occurs before trial. As the court states, someone who plunders a patent, infringing it without any reason to suppose his conduct is arguably defensible, can nevertheless escape any comeuppance under Section 284 solely on the strength of his attorney's ingenuity. As the Supreme Court says, that can't possibly be right, especially when we're looking at the culpability of intentional behavior that should be measured at the time of behavior, that is, at the time infringement occurs, not afterwards. The Supreme Court goes on to point out two additional problems with the Federal Circuit Seagate test, those being the heightened standard of proof and the Federal Circuit standard of review. With respect to the standard of proof, the Supreme Court notes that there's no basis for imposing a clear and convincing evidence standard on Section 284. Preponderance of the evidence is the standard for patent infringement litigation, unless otherwise provided for by Congress. With respect to the standard of review, because the Federal Circuit had developed the two-pronged Seagate test, it had also been imposing a multi-layered standard of review. Specifically, Seagate called for the appellate court to review the objective recklessness prong de novo, the subjective knowledge prong for substantial evidence, and the ultimate award of damages for abuse of discretion. Instead, in this case, the Supreme Court states that enhanced damage awards should be reviewed for abuse of discretion, period. The Supreme Court concludes the opinion by addressing the respondents' arguments. Specifically, they had argued that Congress ratified the Seagate test when the American Invents Act passed in 2011 without any amendment to Section 284. And they also, the respondents, pointed to Section 298 being added to the Patent Act, a provision that clarifies that failure to seek an opinion of counsel is not evidence of willfulness. The Supreme Court quickly dispensed with these arguments, noting that enhanced damages have always been at the district court's discretion, and the retention of Section 284 as written by the AIA is a reflection of that, not anything different. Further, they note that Section 298 is not an endorsement of the Seagate test for enhanced damages, but simply a statutory fix of an unfortunate line of Federal Circuit cases from the 1980s. The last portion of the Supreme Court's opinion discusses the policy issues, which are then further elaborated on in a concurrence written by Justice Breyer and joined by Justices Kennedy and Alito. The respondents had argued that allowing district courts unfettered discretion to award enhanced damages, that is, to award them at the district court's discretion rather than under the two-pronged test, would impede innovation and encourage patent trolls. The court's opinion acknowledges that enhanced damages could deter innovation if they were awarded in all patent cases, garden variety patent cases. But the Supreme Court reminds us that these awards should be limited to a particularly egregious cases, as is the purpose of enhanced damages. The concurrence then picks up on this theme, stating plainly that enhanced damages do have a role to play in encouraging innovation, but that the role should be very limited. The concurrence goes on to point out a couple of bad actors who have used patent litigation as a weapon, and a few amicus briefs that claim that the same behavior, that is, predatory litigation as a weapon, is prevalent and dangerous. Therefore, according to the concurrence, enhanced damages must be kept in check. The concurrence points to three limitations to keep enhanced damages in check to avoid the concern. First, willful infringement shouldn't be simply knowing about a patent. It must be tied to deliberate or wanton infringement behavior. Second, the concurrence notes that nothing about the HALO opinion should be taken to dilute Section 298. Opinions of counsel are not required to thwart a claim of willfulness, especially how expensive opinions can be to obtain. And third, the concurrence draws a distinction between Section 284 enhanced damages for willful infringement and Section 285 attorney fees for vexatious litigation. Section 284, states the concurrence, should not be used to compensate patent holders for litigation-related expenses. Instead, that's what 285 is for. So a couple of closing thoughts. The Seagate test was the test for enhanced damages for the last 9 years, but things have been changing. As a general trend, the Supreme Court has a practice of taking bright-line, hard rules crafted by the Federal Circuit and turning them into more malleable standards. As a specific trend, the Supreme Court did something nearly identical 2 years ago with respect to the award of attorney's fees in exceptional patent infringement cases under Section 285. In the Octane case, the Federal Circuit adopted a two-part bright-line rule to determine when district courts could award attorney's fees, and the Supreme Court, just as it did in the HALO case, determined the test was too rigid. It's very little surprise that HALO Electronics would come out the way it did, very similar to the Octane Fitness case. Finally, and these thoughts represent mine alone, not those of the Federalist Society or the University of Richmond, but I think this case is the right result. Although the mention of patent trolls does make a cameo appearance in the Supreme Court's opinion, much of the hoopla around this case was related to patent trolls and how they used the threat of enhanced damages to hold good, honest manufacturers hostage. This characterization of the case puts the wrong spin on what Section 284 is all about. Section 284 of the Patent Act is not meant to apply to good, honest manufacturers. It is directed at and meant to deter and punish those who are dishonest, willful, deliberate, bad faith, blatant, flagrant infringers. Regardless of who owns the patent, no one else should be able to infringe that patent with impunity. The Supreme Court got this right. This opinion reflects that, and I believe this is a good thing for patent law. That concludes my remarks. I'm going to turn it back over to Will.
All right. Thank you, Professor, for that excellent summary of yesterday's opinion. We're going to open the floor now to audience questions. In a moment, we'll all hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, enter star and then the pound key. Again, if you'd like to hit a question, please enter star and then the pound key. I don't see any questions from our audience yet, so I'm going to take the opportunity here to ask the first question. There was some speculation yesterday that the opinion could lead to increased bad faith and willful infringement litigation. Do you want to comment on that possibility?
Sure. I don't really think that Seagate did much to shut down allegations of willfulness or bad faith, and I don't think, in the same vein, that the HALO case is going to do much to open the door to a flood of litigation about willfulness or bad faith. What Seagate did is it gave district court judges a bright-line rule to apply after infringement and willful infringement was found. Now, instead of a bright-line rule, they have a standard instead of a rule. And when it comes to what they're looking for here, they're looking for bad behavior. And I think district court judges at least should be good at telling bad guys from good guys. So this shouldn't change anything except to allow bad actors who happen to stumble upon a good defense after the fact to still be held liable and punished. And I think that's not going to open up the floodgates. It's just going to give district court judges a little more flexibility when those allegations are made.
We do have one audience question on the line now, so we'll go to that caller. If at any point you would like to join our question queue, I invite you to do so by hitting star and then the pound key. Let's hear from our first caller.
Hi, this is Bob Fitzpatrick in D.C. The Defend Trade Secrets Act, which just got signed by the president, I think the 11th of May, uses the terms bad faith, uses the term willful, uses the term malicious. Any thoughts on how this Supreme Court decision might apply to how the courts are going to define those terms in the Defend Trade Secrets Act?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know that this opinion really does much to help illuminate that as an issue. In this opinion, the court really just uses those words as descriptive of the behaviors that they're concerned about, but they don't really do much to define those terms, and I don't think it's going to help a whole lot when we're trying to understand exactly what's meant by the Defend Trade Secrets Act, but that is a good question.
Thanks.
Well, our lines are still wide open here. We've got plenty of time if anyone else in the audience would like to ask a question. So let's make a last call here. You can ask your question by hitting star and then the pound key. But seeing none, though, Professor, do you have a closing thought that you want to make here before we adjourn?
No, I think that I've said my piece on the matter.
All right. Well, thank you. This is a great summary, very helpful. We'll have this up as a podcast very soon if anyone wants to review Professor Osinga's remarks. The Supreme Court has added another decision day for Thursday of this week. We will expect to hold some telephone calls on the cases that come out that morning, but until then, we do not have any telephone calls scheduled, so I invite you on Thursday morning to please check our website and your email for notice of more calls. Until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.